Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is the end of the Ukraine conflict in sight? Well, that depends. The fact the Russians and the Americans are talking again is a good thing. But is it enough to bring peace back to Europe? I wouldn't count on it. Crosstalking the Path to Peace, I'm joined by my guest, Mats Nielsen, in Stockholm. He is a senior analyst at Dissident Club. In Lund, we have Jan Åberg. He is the director of the Swedish Independent Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research. And in Tulsa, we cross to Jeremy Kuzmatov. He is the managing editor of Covert Action magazine. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mats, let me go to you first in Stockholm. Where do we stand in all of this here? I mean, we get so many different views, particularly from the American administration, depending on if you're listening to Mr. Steve Witkoff or we're listening to Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, or even Waltz, the Security Council advisor. We get different messages from them. It's all good, they say. They're moving in the right direction. But the last bilateral talk the Americans had with the Russians in Saudi Arabia, they didn't release a communique, a readout, what happened. Reports are it's due to Ukrainian objections. So where do we stand right now? Because there's so many moving pieces. Mats in Stockholm.
Yes, well, I would say that's it's almost impossible to give a reasonable answer to that, because where we stand changes by the hour. But as a baseline, I would believe right now, at least I believe, that the Russians are genuinely interested in rapprochement with the United States, and as is the USA with Russia. Now, whether Washington can offer this is perhaps an open question, because as we all know, the situation in the United States is not all that clear. And by that, I mean the mandate for Trump to go forward with a deal with Russia is hindered by internal difficulties. And by those internal difficulties, I'm referring to the opposition, not mainly from the Democrats. The Democrats are effectively out of the game for the time being, but from within his own Republican cadre. So while I believe there is definitely a will on both the Russian end and the American end on reaching some kind of settlement between them, there is still the question of what kind of settlements will be reached between Russia and Ukraine directly, which is also needed. And secondarily, will Trump be able to push Ukraine to this table, considering mainly internal United States opposition?
Jan, essentially the same question to you, because as I said in my introduction, it's a good thing the Russians and the Americans are talking again, and they haven't. This has been the first time since the start of the Biden administration. But is it enough to solve the Ukraine problem? This is the quandary that we're all in right now. Mats is absolutely right. The Russian side wants to have reasonable, normal relations with the United States, but it's not going to compromise its security to have that relationship. That's the quandary. Jan.
Well, I think we are where we are because the world suffers from a disease called conflict and peace illiteracy. Please notice none of the involved parties have a clue about peace. There are no advisors on peace, nonviolent conflict resolution, or whatever. They have no ministries of peace. They have no ambassadors for peace. The United Nations and other possible mediators are not involved. You can go on like that, and there will be war because nobody knows about peace. It's peace illiteracy that guides the world, and that's why we have militarism. I mean, if you ask me, this is going to go nowhere because the parties are very far from each other. That's true. But also because we need somebody who could go in. I cannot say exactly who, the United Nations, the OSCE, perhaps China, perhaps a group of experts. That could be discussed. But we need somebody who are mediating, who have no interest in a particular outcome of this conflict. Conflict here is about NATO versus Russia. The main conflict here is not Russia or Ukraine. It all started 10 years ago by the Obama administration and the coup d'etat and all that. So what we're facing here is a classical thing that is bound to happen because the competence to do conflict resolution and peacemaking does not exist anymore in the Western world.
Yeah, Jeremy, all the more so when we look at the attempts to resolve the conflict in Ukraine or about Ukraine. It is also applies to Palestine, Israel, because the United States is trying to be a mediator, but it's a supporter of one side. And you can't really mediate that because you cannot be divorced from self-interest, okay? Obviously, the United States has invested a lot in the Ukraine proxy war. It's a project of the Democratic Party that Trump has inherited. And the same applies with Palestine. I mean, in the case of Palestine, the United States is Israel's lawyer. In the case of Ukraine, the Americans are the lawyer for the Ukrainians. That's why mediation is so difficult. I absolutely agree with Jan. Go ahead, in Tulsa, Jeremy.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. And I think the problem is imperial. I mean, the United States has pursued an imperialistic foreign policy, and until there's a broader revolt among the American population against that, we're going to see continued conflict because the U.S. has a clear underlying agenda in this war. You know, they goaded the Russians. They use Ukraine basically as a proxy to induce, to try and trap the Russians like they did in Afghanistan into a quagmire and weak as a base for weakening the Russians and dominating the Eurasian region and its rich oil and gas resources. So they're not just going to give up the farm. And, you know, the issue of territorial concessions, I mean, Russia has gained a lot of territory. And so far, we have no indication that the Trump administration. And, yeah, the first point was good that, you know, Trump is, even if he wanted to, he's under so much pressure from his own party, from the media, from the neoconservatives, from the corporate interests that back this agenda of dominating the Eurasian region. So he's going to have a hard time allowing for any territorial concessions. And Russia is not going to, Russia has invested so much blood in this, they can't give up the territory they've conquered. And also those people voted in referendum to rejoin Russia. They want to be part of Russia. So Russia, you know, is not going to give up anything. But will the U.S. be willing to accept Russian territorial gains? I mean, the whole purpose of the war was to weaken Russia.
Yeah.
And the other issue is sanctions. Trump has ratcheted up the sanctions. So is he really a peacemaker? I mean, that was the root of the war. It really started in 2012. You know, the economic war was the beginning, then the Maidan coup. And Trump is just increasing the sanctions right now, increasing the arms sales. So, I mean, I'm not that optimistic.
Yeah, well, Mats, you know, it's already been mentioned here. Jan brought up some excellent points here, is that the American mindset is always a ceasefire, cessation of hostilities. In the case of Ukraine, Russia wants peace. Okay, it doesn't want a ceasefire. It wants peace. It wants security. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, because all the parties have different end goals. We could even throw in the Europeans that want endless war until they see Russia defeated. That's ridiculous. Trump just wants a Nobel Peace Prize and get out of this. Go ahead, Mats.
True, but if we for a moment look at the Russian position, you have to remember that the United States is definitely too big and too powerful for it to be in Russia's interest to be at permanent odds with the United States.
I agree, yes.
So in the long term, it would definitely be better for Moscow to find an agreement, be it an initial ceasefire agreement and thereby allowing the powers, and by the powers, I mean the United States and Russia, I'm totally excluding the EU from this, to exist peacefully until a final settlement can be signed between Russia and Ukraine. Because you have to remember, in my view, I said that Trump hands were tied as well. I would like to make the argument that Putin himself does not have a free hand in this anymore.
Oh, of course not.
Because once a war is initiated, war gains a momentum of its own and renders difficulties that previously could just be, you know, glossed over and forgotten about. So a substantial portion of the Russian electorate, I think, now believes that Russia has to firmly assess their power in Ukraine. So, and I'm saying this in view of what the Russian Security Council have been making, the different statements that has come from some of the council's members. So I think Putin himself has to stick to a minimum of Russian objectives. So he's in no position to walk back from these objectives. Unfortunately, even the minimum of the Russian objectives might be too high a price for Trump to be able to give. So there is definitely a lock in the negotiations, and
you're absolutely right. And a tangent to that, Jan, is the road record of trusting the United States. The Russians don't trust the Americans. You know, not one step further east of NATO expansion. We have the coup in 2014. We have the Minsk process. We had Istanbul. The Russians simply don't trust the Americans. Go ahead, Jan, before we go to the break.
Yes, I think that's true, and they have no reason to it. And that's why I'm looking for somebody else to be a mediator, a mediating group, or somebody who is competent in these issues. Because, as you said, Peter, before, no one who is a participant in a conflict can also be a mediator. This is total bizarre. We know that from, you know, civil life in our societies. Yes. But when it comes to international politics, people believe that that can be done. And if the Americans come in with their weapons and their threats and Trump says something, then there will be peace. I mean, this is a very primitive society that has no idea about how to handle conflict, because we are totally wildly, absurdly, bizarrely over-armed world.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. Jan, particularly when it's a good business model, that's a big problem when dealing with conflict. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the path to peace. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the path to peace. Okay, let's turn to Jeremy in Tulsa. One of the interesting events over the last few days was Tucker Carlson's interview with Steve Witkoff. And for so many reasons, it's interesting. He's not a professional diplomat. He's not schooled in these things whatsoever. He basically spoke very freely, openly, not in a most sophisticated way. And I'm not being disparaging about that. I think a lot of people in politics are so overly pompous, they never say anything. But when it comes to Ukraine, he said a lot of obvious things on the ground. Okay, what's happening with a referendum about Ukraine's difficulties on the front, et cetera, et cetera. And Jeremy, it was very difficult for officialdom to accept facts on the ground. That's another problem we have going towards peace, not recognizing reality. Because the West has run this conflict in Ukraine as a meme all of the time. Narratives, they change the narrative. It doesn't change reality, Jeremy.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Yeah, I followed that interview. And yeah, he admitted that the people voted overwhelmingly. I think he used the word overwhelmingly to be part of Russia. And for years, we've been hearing that those referendum were just staged and, you know, Soviet style. So he completely contradicted the propaganda we've been hearing for years now. And I think you make an excellent point. I think most of the American population, including the liberal left, which traditionally is more anti-war and could provide an embers for an anti-imperialist movement to really rein in foreign policy, they've been the most gung-ho Russophobes, and they've bought into all these tropes. And, you know, I just did an article about the Odessa massacre. The European court ruled, you know, gave compensation to the victims and found that indeed they were attacked by these right-wing thugs who the Ukrainian government had given carte blanche to go in there. And they wanted them to intimidate the population, and they held back the fire and emergency service. And that was never reported, and it's still not reported, because my article pointed out that it was the story, it was a whitewash in the U.S. media, and including the alternative media.
Yeah.
And the alternative media universe, like The Intercept and Democracy Now!, that cater more to the activists, and they're bombarded with articles about Israel-Palestine. But nothing on Ukraine and how bad Ukraine is. And all the activism has been about Palestine. But these students, you know, Ukraine is as great an outrage of U.S. foreign policy as Israel. I think they're both equivalent. The U.S. has been arming these horrific regimes, provoking conflict, horrible humanitarian consequences. But there's no anti-war activism because the political consciousness is not there, including among activist sectors. So let alone the middle classes who.
Jeremy, if you're getting a check from the USAID, I suppose that influences your opinion. I think it'll change a lot in Ukraine because that funding is being cut off. Thank goodness. There's nothing independent about that. That's not independent media. You know, Matt's.
Just to add. It gets to your point. There's no momentum for a peace and an end to this conflict. There's no pressure. That can help if there's popular pressure against the government, but we're not seeing that.
Yeah, well, yours truly is doing his best, okay? I've been doing my best for years. You know, I'm sorry to say, but, you know the trade union tragedy, I reported on that, and I was completely dismissed, okay? And now the Europeans come out and give compensation. Okay, it's better to be on the side of truth, okay? Mats, let's spread it out a little bit, because one of the interesting things, after the second Putin-Trump phone call, and you look at the readouts, they were very, very different. It was very interesting to look at them. What it looks like to me, the Trump administration is in a hurry. They want this thing in Ukraine to be wrapped up. But they have no idea how to do it. Okay, but they seem to want to normalize relations with Russia because, well, Trump is looking further afield, and that country is called Iran. What do you think?
Most definitely, and it's probably along the lines of. Trump trying to consolidate his position. And if you look at it from a business model, making peace with Russia is probably the least costly, as you can always, with propaganda, resell the Russians as a potential ally. And by that, I mean, from a U.S. perspective or for a U.S. voter, they can once again be told that Russia is a Christian country. It has old Orthodox traditions, and it can once again be trusted. But it's more of an importance to Trump to sell those pesky Muslims in the Iranian mullahs and so forth as the enemy. Of course, he's doing this to abide by the wishes of Israel and to control the flow of oil and other such matters. But I think it's, as you say, America wants to be done with the strife concerning Ukraine. From a Russian point of view, I hope that Russia can pull America into basically telling Ukraine to start negotiations directly with Russia. Because once again, from the Russian point of view, it would be far better to have a bilateral negotiation conducted in a common language. We both know that Zelensky and Putin speak Russian.
Well, Matt, because it already happened. It happened in Istanbul. You're absolutely right.
Exactly. But now hopefully, America will tell Zelensky to go through with the negotiations. Otherwise, he might be on this helicopter leaving from Sikorsky Street in Kiev from the American embassy. You never know. So that's what I mean by applying pressure. Last time it was Boris Johnson telling Zelensky to end the negotiation. Hopefully, bilateral negotiations this time, Zelensky will be told to continue with them. If he would survive that, internally in Ukraine, that's a totally different matter. And of course, the dark horse in all this is always what the nefarious MI6 and the British and the European Union will do to try and destroy these bilateral talks. That's, as always, an open question. Since, as my colleague in Denmark said, there is no aura of peace anywhere right now. Yeah, it's just war.
Jan, you know, we hear from some of the Europeans about this coalition of the willing, but there is a coalition out there, and it's called the War Coalition. They have far more power and influence than anyone that wants, any group that wants peace. Go ahead, Jan.
Yes. Could I just pick up one thing you said before the break? And that is this business model. It's good business to make weapons. Let me be very clear on that. There does not exist a single study anywhere that shows that arms industry has a healthy, positive effect on the civilian economy.
Yeah. I said that satirically. You do know that. I said that satirically, ironically.
But I think for your audience, it's important to know, because labor unions politicians would say that this rearming now Europe with $800 billion or whatever it is will be good for the economy. It will mean bankruptcy for the Europeans.
Of course.
That's what I'm concerned about, because the burden of all this is totally on the civilian economy. It'll hit pensions, it'll hit prices, it'll hit old people, it'll hit cultural life, etc. It's a disaster for the European Union what they are doing now, but they don't see it because they don't know things. Secondly, let me say that I don't want to just be critical about this lack of peace competition. I would like to say, if we could get somebody to devise, in cooperation with all the parties, what a desirable future would be for the Ukrainians, for the Russians, and for the Europeans, and for the Americans. And look into the future, because everything we talk about in these discussions are about the present or the past. It is not about what the future could be. And if people cannot see a more positive future in the future, using imagination and seeing where could they tie in and have a better life together, they will keep on doing warfare.
Yeah.
But if they say, oh, we could have a wonderful Ukraine in 10 years from now if we do A, B, and C, then it will stop. And that is what people in the politics don't understand, because they don't look, you know, very far into the future. They basically look, you know, and the European Union is not only 2 weeks looking at the consequences and being surprised that they are losing it. So I'm very adamant on this point. And I think that it has to be said again and again. We have an international society that is anti every type of peace, conflict resolution, nonviolence, and intelligent handling of natural conflicts, because conflicts are natural. What we must get rid of is the violence in the conflicts.
You know, and Jeremy, I have a solution. I've been peddling it now for a long time, is having a pan-European security conference, okay? Something, you know, along the lines of the Helsinki process in the 1970s. But there's no courage for that. I think the Russians would go for it in a heartbeat. Go ahead. We have a minute and a half. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, yeah, I think these are great points that you're raising. And, yeah, I think we can look to history for some kind of workable arrangement. I think, you know, many Europeans do recognize that it's in their interest to have good trading ties with the Russians, that there are a lot of opportunities there. So I agree with what Jan was saying. We need to promote a positive vision of the future that includes Russia in a, you know, a European community, and go forward from there.
Well, you know, Mats, we still have about a minute or so. Is this going to turn into Trump's Vietnam, Trump's Afghanistan? Go ahead.
No, I don't think so. There's so many other potholes that the Trump administration will hit that will risk tip over to tip the manga trailer. I think what America and especially Europe needs to just realize that the war with Russia is lost. And once you admit this, you can come to what Jan said, you can come to looking at the future. And by that, I mean, stop insisting on putting Ukrainian proxies through more hell by propping up a war. So you just need to, first of all, admit that the war is lost and then start looking towards the future.
We've run out of time, gentlemen, but unfortunately for the Ukrainian people, it's never been about the Ukrainian people, and that is pathetic and tragic here. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Lund, Stockholm, and in Tulsa. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.